Mishnah morning. Today's daf and getting is Yud Aleph. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf as well as Zichron Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmua. We start today on the Mishnah Yud Amud Beis. Call Hashtar Sa'olim Be'er Kosha of Dikochavim. You have a document which is processed in a non-Jewish court. Processing of a document in a non-Jewish court is we're going to see this a number of times throughout the sugya. We're talking about where it's an established court. It's not Jewish, but it's established. Take a look at the Rashi on the Mishnah. Malkum Beis Vad. So Rashi says we're talking about a place where it's a Beis Vad. It's established. Dayanim Kvurim Shalahem. And they're established judges as well. So in other words, it's reputable. And then you're going to hear that again and again from my mouth this morning, that we're talking about where it's a non-Jewish court, it's reputable. So Alpha P. The Mishnah goes on to describe. So even though that not only is the process in non-Jewish court, but it also have non-Jews signing on the document itself. So the Mishnah says it's kosher, perfectly valid, legitimate document, and collectible using such a document. With exclusion to get nashim and shechur avadim, a document that is signed by non-Jews, according to the Tanna Kamma of our Mishnah, is not going to be acceptable. And the reason why is because we're talking now about a get. A get is a document, but it's not, and it is a legal document, but it's a document that really is, it's primarily based on the Torah, meaning Kedushin, Gittin and Kedushin, other way around, Kedushin and Gittin. So those are Jewish concepts. Obviously, you have marriage in the world of the B'nai Noach. They have a concept of marriage, but their marriage is not affected through Kedushin, and it's not dissolved through Gittin. In other words, they have some sort of process in terms of how they do it, but they're not subscribed by the parameters of the Torah. So therefore, they're not to put it simply, they're not a bar hachi. They're just simply not part of the whole system and not part of the whole process. So according to the Tanna Kamma, when it comes to a standard document that's signed by a non-Jew, that's fine. In other words, you're talking about a financial transaction, and the authenticity of the non-Jew is a perfectly legitimate way of ratifying the document. But when it comes to Gittin, Nashim, Shechur, Avadim, these are Jewish concepts. These are Torah concepts. So therefore, they're just simply not included in the parsha. And therefore, their signatures don't serve as a means of making this document a legitimate document. Adkan, that's the opinion of the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Afeluk Sherim. Rabbi Shimon says it's kosher. Okay, and for reasons which we already know, because we already saw it in the Gemara, in terms of an explanation of Rabbi Shimon, but if you forgot, so the good news is we're going to hear it again. The Gemara is going to explain again what's behind the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, so stay tuned. We're going to learn together why Rabbi Shimon says even Gittin Nashim that is signed by a non-Jew is going to be a valid document. Ela Bizman Lo Huzkaru. And then the Mishnah ends off with the following statement. Lo Huzkaru, the only time that it was mentioned that a document signed by non-Jew is possible, meaning even Rabbi Shimon will admit. Now, what I'm suggesting in the Mishnah is that this line is being authored by Rabbi Shimon. That's pashtus. That's a simple pshat in the Mishnah. Later on, we're going to offer a different pshat in the Mishnah, but right now, kipshuto, lo huskaru. Rabbi Shimon says, look, in general, I think that basically any document signed by non-Jew is fine. Whether it's mamonos, whether it's gittin nashim, I think it's all fine. Lo huskaru, there is a time where it's not going to be good. And that is if you go to a non-Jewish court, but it's not really a court. It's a kangaroo court. It's not established. It's not reputable. Under those circumstances, so then even I'll admit and I'll agree that the document has no validity. But if you're talking about going to an established court, it's a non-Jewish court, so then it has validity. And according to Rabbi Shimon, it always will have validity, both in terms of mamonos and in terms of gittin nashim as well. Okay, the Gemara starts off the discussion. Now, let's understand what we're talking about. We are talking about a non-Jewish court, non-Jewish witnesses signing on the document, and the Mishnah says it has validity. And the Mishnah's position is according to everybody, meaning even the Tanna Kamma was more machmer, but he's only machmer as it relates to Gittin Hashem Shechur Avadim. But when it comes to a regular document, a standard financial document, the Tanna Kamma is of the opinion that's fine. And the Gemara says it's hard to understand whether we're talking about Shtar Mech or whether we're talking about Shtar Matana. Now, Bishlam Mech Mechiyav Zuzukamayhu Dekana Vishtar Raya Bamahu. Now, the Gemara says, now, in terms of Shtar Mech, I understand. Because let's think about the transaction. A sale, a regular sale. Okay, a sale that's affected between one Jew and another Jew over property. It's easiest to talk about property. So let's assume we're talking about property right now. So it's a transaction over property. So how is the transaction affected? So the Mishnah Kedushin tells us that there are three ways to buy property: kesef, shtar, v'chazaka. And let's just assume that money was transferred. Rashi says it over here, so it's easy to assume that. So let's assume that there was money went from hand to hand. Kinyan is done. In other words, now we have a transaction. So what's the document? Document serves as a proof. It's a raya. Okay, so now if the document itself is just serving as a raya, you can have anyone sign it. That's not a big deal. And that's exactly what the Gemara says. So Bisham Amecha Michiyav Zuzikamai, when it comes to a sale, a transaction of, again, let's just say we're talking about a property, where money is transferred, who dekana. So the money is what's creating the kinyan. Vishtar Raya Baalmahu. And all the document is just serves as a proof. Because if money wasn't given, so this is an established court that's worried about its reputation, and they know that they can't lie, because that will then challenge the entire validity of the court, and they're an established court, so of course they're going to tell the truth. But let's say it's talking about not a sale, but let's say it's talking about a gift. Right. What creates a transaction of a gift? There's no money, obviously. That's the whole definition of a gift, that there's no money being transferred. So the only thing that creates the transaction is the actual document itself. So now the document no longer is just serving as proof. The document now is actually affecting the transaction. Well, if the document is affecting the transaction, now we have a problem. Because now it's not you signing it. Non-Jews are not in that position to affect a transaction. So the Gemara, at least in the Havamin of the Gemara, Ela Matan B'Maika Kani La B'Haishtara V'Haishtara Chas B'Mamu. And the Gemara says, and as far as the Shtar is concerned, it's nothing. You can't. In terms of a means of creating the transaction, can't be anything. So how does that work? So Amar Shmuel. So to this, the Gemara is going to give really two fundamental answers in terms of. A Shtar Mecher, the Gemara says, that's a money transaction, the money created the kinyan, that's fine. The document serves as proof, I understand. But what we're right now struggling to understand is, how can I have a Shtar Matana, signed by non-Jews, and how can that be effective? So, fundamental answer number one, Amar Shmuel, the Gemara says, we saw this back in the Darim, the statement of Shmuel, Amar Shmuel, Dina de Machusa Dina. So, fundamental answer number one is, we're going to just change around our entire assumption. We started off in the question assuming that if a non-Jew signed on a document, it can't be anything. It's Chas B'Alma. It's nothing. The answer of the Gemara is, no, 180. No, it's not nothing. It's something. Meaning, Dina de Machusa Dina. That when we are under a governing body, right, and we're not autonomous, and we're under someone's authority. And you know, last couple thousand years of diaspora, it's just the truth. So under those circumstances, we have to abide by the law of the land. Not only do we have to abide by the law of the land, but for us, even for us, the law of the land also becomes law. So in other words, when a non-Jew signs on a document in front of an established court, Dina de Machusa Dina tells us it is a valid document. In other words, the document itself can create the kinyan, even though it's signed by non-Jews, because of the principle of Dina de Machusa Dina. That's answer number one. Ivai, same with the Gemara, gives a second answer. Tani chutz me chigiti nashim. So what we're going to do is we're going to add one letter in our Mishnah, or either add a letter or understand the Mishnah to mean the following. When the Mishnah says that all documents signed by non-Jew are good except for Gitei Nashim, what we are now to understand is that Gitei Nashim is not an example, it's a prototype. It's an example, but it's just an example of what the type of document is. If the document is just merely proof, fine. You can have the court write it up, the non-Jewish court write it up, you can have non-Jews signing on the document, that's fine. But if the document is creating the kinyan, like a get, like a shtar matana, so under those circumstances, you can't have a non-Jew sign, because it's no longer a shtar raya, now it's actually a shtar kinyan, it simply doesn't work. The Gemara says that's another way to understand the Mishnah, and it would seem then that this second answer of the Gemara is rejecting the answer of Dina de Machusa Dina, meaning what could be, and I don't want to make too much of the two answers of the Gemara, but what could be, is that the Gemara is really arguing in these two answers as to, in terms of, to what degree is this legitimacy of Dina D'Malchus HaDina, is it going to go even so far as to make a non-Jew signature on a document going to be considered a valid means of creating a transaction? Take a look at the first long Rashi on the Samud. Chutz Tani Chutz Mechikit Nashim Kol Shar Shein Kikit Nashim Shai Deshtar Davar Nigmar Dahinu Namishtar Matana. Okay, so first Rashi says the pshat in the Gemara, which we said, which is that the second answer of the Gemara is that a Mishnah, by citing Gitei Nashim, is just simply merely giving an example. Any document signed by a non-Jew, which is creating the kinyan, is simply not going to be good. Okay. Now, Rashi notes that the Gemara could have given another answer, and this answer would have worked as well. Rashi says that the Gemara could have suggested that you had non-Jews signing on the document, but you had Jews seeing the document being transferred from the gifter to the giftee. In other words, Eidim Mesira. Eidim Mesira obviously are Jewish. Under those circumstances, it would be good. Remember, we have a basic machlokus between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir. We've had it from the beginning of the Masechta, and we're going to have it again and again. It's one of the cornerstones of Masechta's Gittin. According to Rabbi Meir, Eide Chasima is what gives a shtar its koach. But according to Rabbi Elazar, it's not the Eide Chasima, it's the Eide Mesira. The witnesses who see the transferring of the document from the two parties involved in the transaction, they're the ones who are giving the document its power, its koach. According to Rav Elazar, you don't need witnesses to sign on the document. So if you don't need witnesses to sign on the document, so therefore, what difference does it make whether you have no signatures or whether you have two non-Jewish signatures? It shouldn't make a difference. Rashi notes that the Gemara could have given this answer, that I had non-Jews signing on the document, but I had two Jews see the transfer, and the halacha goes like Rav Elazar. So, why doesn't the Gemara give this answer? It seems to be a very good answer. So Rashi notes that, although this would be a good answer, but Rashi says it's a bit forced, and I'll tell you why. Because, first of all, you should remember that we already gave this answer once before, on yesterday's daf. And you remember, why didn't the Gemara like this answer? Because in our Mishnah, we have a machlokas between the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon. And we noted yesterday, and we're going to say it again in just a moment, that Rabbi Shimon subscribes to Rabbi Elazar. Meaning that's the only way to understand Rabbi Shimon. So if Rabbi Shimon subscribes to Rabbi Elazar, what's the Tanakama's position? By process of elimination, Tanakama's position is that he holds like Rabbi Meir. So it'd be very difficult, as we're trying to say a pshat in the Tanakama, that we're going to now say that the Tanakama is holding like Rabbi Elazar, when meanwhile, Rabbi Shimon holds like Rabbi Elazar. And Rashi knows that that's difficult. And it's true, the Gemara yesterday said, Rashi goes on to write, now if you remember, the Gemara in yesterday's daf said, well, maybe both the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon subscribe to a Rabbi Elazar's viewpoint, that Eidim Mesira, and the difference between the two of them is when the names on the documents are so obviously non-Jewish names. So, and the Gemara says maybe that's a machlokes between the Tanakam and Rav Elazar. But Rashi admits, although the Gemara doesn't say this, Rashi says it. Rashi is allowed to say it. Rashi admits, but this is really kind of like a forced answer. It's not the Pshuto Shel Mishnah. Pshuto Shel Mishnah is that the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon of our Mishnah is arguing principally about whether or not Eide Chasima Kores or Eide Mesira or Kores. Okay, back to our Gemara. We're on the bottom of Yud Amud Beis. We're continuing in our analysis of the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Aveluk Shem v'chulei v'halav b'nei krisos ninu. The Gemara's question, the obvious question, Rabbi Shimon says that even if I have non-Jews signing on a get, so Rabbi Shimon says that's fine. The Gemara, shocked. How can that be fine? What are we talking about? I'm Rabbi Zera. Yarad Rabbi Shem L'shito Sosha Rabbi Elazar. Okay, as the Gemara says, what we've said already before, what we're saying now again, and that is Rabbi Shema subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Elazar. Damar Eidim Mesira Karsay. That really, the Eidim of signing on the document are not what's giving any document its oomph. The oomph is given by the Eidim Mesira. Over here, it's the Eidim Mesira who are witnessing the document being handed over from the husband to the wife. That's it. That's what gives this document its validity. Now, the Gemara says, so the Gemara says what we saw earlier in the beginning of the Masechta, what we're seeing now again, even according to Rabbi Elazar, no signatures on the document, that's fine. That's perfectly fine. But if I have witnesses who are signing on the document who are not kosher, so even Rebbe Lazar would agree that that such a document is not going to be good. A get like that will not be good. Why not? So we saw this before. We're going to get to see it again. Take a look at Rashi, the bottom Rashi in the Amud. He writes, Mod Rebbe Lazar ben Mezuch metocha da'af agav dama Rebbe Lazar get shein alav edem kosher. It's true, Rebbe Lazar allows the get to have no signatures, but dafka ain alav edem aval yesh bo edem psulim. But Rashi writes that if I have Eidim Psulim, so then it would be Pasul, and it would be Pasul on a rabbinic level. Dilma ka'asi lemimsre ba'apayu mismachalayu. Rashi writes, and we saw this before also, as Shitas Rashi, is that the concern is that once I have witnesses signing on the document, so now, at a later point in time, we're going to look back at the document, and we're going to say, hey, look, they signed on it. Oh, must be that they're kosher witnesses. Let's use them again. And you call them up and you'll use them again. And meanwhile, they weren't kosher. Why were they signing on the document? Because again, according to Rebbe Lazar, they don't need to sign on the document. But once we give them an allowance, that'll give them a de facto credibility that they must be kosher. So here, that's exactly the issue. That's the problem. So what's called mezuyif mentocha. Once you see witnesses signing a document, so then we're going to assume that they're good witnesses. And meanwhile, they're not. So the Gemara now is asking a question. Rabbi Shimon says that if I have non-Jews signing on a document, so that's fine. And the Gemara explained that Rabbi Shimon is going like Rebbe Lazar, that Eidim Mesira Kores. But meanwhile, mezuyif mentocha, even Rebbe Lazar would admit that if I have witnesses who are not valid witnesses, here they're not Jews. Of course they're not valid. In the world of Gittin, so therefore it's not going to be good. So the Gemara says, "Hacha b'mayis kin m'shemus muvakim." So the Gemara says, "Yeah, but even though mezuyif mitochu is going to be an issue, if the names are so obviously non-Jews, so then even Rabbi Abba would tell us that Rabbi Lazar's position would be that the get would be perfectly fine, because the only concern, like Rashi says, is that I'm going to use them again for a future event. But if their names are so obviously not Jewish, so then we're not going to use them again. Hey, chidam shemus mavakim. You remember when we saw this Gemara yesterday? I struggled to it's being part of the diaspora for so many years. I struggled to come up with a name that's exclusively not Jewish. But now I don't have to worry, because the Gemara is going to provide a whole slew of names that are exclusively non-Jewish names. So b'shemus muvakim, hechidam b'shemus muvakim. So the Gemara says, what are examples of names that are strictly in the domain of non-Jews? Amar Papa Kigon. So the Gemara is going to give a number of examples. Hormiz, Avudina, Bar Shiptai, Bar Kidrai, Bati, Nakim, Una. Okay, names of non-Jews. And Rashi notes, by the way, famous non-Jews. Rashi says, Kulam shemos dayane ovdi kochav lemhem. These are judges. Okay, so these are the famous judges of the 3rd century, Iraq, so circa 3rd, 4th century. Okay, so Tosus has a discussion. I'm not going to go through the Tosusim, but you can see the first three, four Tosusim on the daf discuss exactly, you know, the correct girsa regarding these names and what they connote. Anyway, those are classically non-Jews, non-Jewish names, and therefore, if you see that name on the get, even Rabbi Lazar will tell you that it's not a problem whatsoever. No one's going to confuse them with a kosher aid. Avashem Hashem Avukim Ma'ilo. So the Gemara says, okay, so now here's what you're telling me. Let me get this straight. We have a get. We have witnesses signing on it. They're not Jews. So now, basically, we're going to be making the following distinction. If the names that are signed on these documents are classic non-Jewish names, and clearly non-Jewish names, so then it's fine. If there's an ambiguity in the name, so then it's not good. So what we just now understood is that there's a very clear delineation between names that are classically non-Jewish versus names that are somewhere in the middle, a little ambiguous. So now what we have is what's called a chiluk. We have a very simple distinction. You remember the end of the Mishnah? What did the end of the Mishnah tell us? That even Rabbi Shimon will admit that there are going to be times when the get is not going to be good. And then he goes on to discuss how if you bring the get to a non-certified court, right, a makeshift court, put assembled together by non-Jews, The Gemara is now asking, we didn't even need to get to that. What are we talking about? So the Gemara's question is very simple. Now we know that we have a built-in chiluk, even in a get, that's brought to a certified court, an established non-Jewish court, and well, no, the difference lies in whether or not the names on the bottom are classically non-Jewish names versus names that are ambiguous. And so why didn't the Mishnah give that chiluk? So the Gemara's answer is, read the Mishnah again, and read this into the answer of the Mishnah. This is exactly what the Mishnah meant. That's how you're going to have to read the Mishnah, where the Mishnah actually means that once you have a non-Jew signing on, two non-Jews signing on the bottom of the get, and their names are not classically not Jewish names, and there's an ambiguity, it's ki'ilu, it's as if we now went to a non-certified, non-established, non-Jewish court, and it's not going to be good. That's one way to understand the Mishnah. E-bayis eimam. Or the Gemara says, I'll tell you what. What we could do now is we could look again at the last line of the Mishnah, and v'ibayisema seifas l'negite mamon. And what we, the way we can understand the end of the Mishnah is that the end of the Mishnah is not a comment on Rabbi Shimon. All right? I mentioned when we read the Mishnah. The simplest way to read the Mishnah, the last line of the Mishnah, lo huskaru, is that it's going on Rabbi Shimon, because it immediately follows Rabbi Shimon. However, what the Gemara now is suggesting, advancing, is that this last line of the Mishnah is going on the Reisha of the Mishnah. What was the Reisha of the Mishnah? We're talking about not Gittin documents, but we're talking about monetary documents. And now, what was the Tanakhama's position? Monetary documents are fine. Brought to a non-Jewish court, signed by non-Jewish witnesses, they're fine even according to the Tanakhama. And now the Mishnah is now the Gemara is understanding that the last line of the Mishnah, lo huskru, is going back on this point. And here's how the Gemara understands it. Seif asan legite mamon vehachi kamar. Lo huskru gite mamon depsulim ela bezman shenasu behejot. And that's what the Mishnah means. That even when it comes to regular monetary contract, which the Mishnah, the Tanakhama, the Mishnah says, would be perfectly fine to be signed by, to be processed and signed in a non-Jewish court by non-Jewish witnesses, that's true, but it has to be established. If they're not established courts, so then it's not going to be good and it's not going to have any validity. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi writes over here. I mean, Rashi says this a couple times over the course of the daf, but Rashi says the difference lies in the fact. I'm not going to read the whole Rashi. I'll just the Rashi asan legite mamon. Okay, depreciates time of the L, right in the middle of the Rashi. Dezuzi kanule, because really, again, when we're talking about a monetary transaction, what's creating the kinyan is the money. Money's really creating the kinyan. And ushtara lesadus of alma, and it's and in terms of the document is there only to provide evidence and proof. The ilo di yahiv zuze kamay lo have mar nashayu. And here Rashi says, and again Rashi said this, made this point earlier as well. Rashi says all this simply serves as evidence, and we're talking about an established court. The established court is not going to want to lose its reputation. That's what Rashi means when it's Rashi says lo have mar nashayu. This is an established court. It's a reputed court, and it wants to protect its reputation. So the document is only serving as proof. The court wants to uphold its reputation. We're fine. Everything's fine. However, if we're not talking about a reputable court, if we're going to some sort of makeshift kangaroo court, so under those circumstances, then it won't be good, not even to serve as proof to the existence of such a transaction. The answer to that question is yes. In fact, we're going to see that in just a moment. That the get itself could be written in other languages. Didn't make the Mishnah in Sota, but yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Tanya. Okay. We are on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. We are a little less than halfway down on the Amud, and we're continuing in the Gemara. Tanya Amar Rav Elazar Rabbi Yossi Kach Amar Rabbi Shimon LeChachamim B'Tzidon. This is what Rabbi Shimon said to the Chachamim in Tzidon. Okay, now let's reflect for just a moment. Rabbi Shimon says that if you have witnesses signing on a document and they are not Jewish witnesses, so Rabbi Shimon says, for the most part, it's almost always going to be good. Okay, he says it's true by mamonos. He says it's true by gittin as well. How can Rabbi Shimon say that? So again, we asked the question already once earlier this morning, and our answer is, and our answer continues to be, because Rabbi Shimon subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Lazar says eidim misira kares, and so therefore the witnesses on the bottom are not necessary, and so therefore Rabbi Shimon allows non-Jews to sign on almost all documents. The only limitation that we had, we saw back in the Mishnah, is when it's not, when you're not bringing it in front of an established court. Okay. Now, in this brisa, Rabbi Shimon is going to turn to the Chachamim. Now, the Chachamim disagree. And the Chachamim are of the opinion that a non-Jew can only sign on monetary, on monetary contracts, but not on not on divorce documents and not Shechurei Avadim. Here, Rabbi Shimon's turning to the Chacham and basically arguing his point. And he's hearkening back to the previous generation. Remember, Rabbi Shimon is generally Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was a student of Rabbi Akiva, one of the five. And so now he's hearkening back to the previous generation. And he says, look, I know what the previous generation said. He writes, "Kacham." The Brisa writes, "Kacham Rabbi Shimon LaChacham and B'tzidon. Lo nechleku Rabbi Kiva Chachamim al kol ashtaros ha'olim berkosh of the kochavim, sha'af apisha chosmem of the kochavim sheirim." I know that that all documents signed by Ovdei Kochavim are fine. Even the previous generation were fine with it. Ve'afilu gitei nashim v'shichru avadim. And I'm telling you, they were okay with it, even if it was for divorce. And even if it was shichru avadim, they would be fine with it. Lo nechlu golem, bezman shenasu behejo. The only debate that exists between them is only if it was done in front of a non-certified court, a non-established court. Rabbi Akiva machshav v'chachamim poslim. And Rabbi Akiva says it's fine. And the Chachamim says it's possible. With exception for get and for shechura. So this is Rabbi Shimon just simply making his point again, but his point is amplified by the fact that in the previous generation they all said it, and the only time that they have a debate is regarding when you're going to a non-established court. So the Gemara says, "Rashi Gamliel Amar Af Eluk Sherim B'Makom She'en Yisrael Chosmem, Ava B'Makom She'en Yisrael Chosmem Lo." So the Gemara says, and according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, even these would be kosher when you have. But only when non-Jews are signing. But when you have Jews that are signing, so it's not going to be good. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, well, I'm not quite following. Meaning, if one location you have Jews signing, another location you have Jews not signing, so shouldn't we make a gzera? So the Gemara says, no. Shma bishma machlif, asr ba'asr lo machlif. The Gemara says, in terms of names, so once we allow one name, so we should be gozer other names as well. But from one location to another location, we're not going to make any type of gzera. Okay. Adkan, that's the Braisa, that's Gemara's analysis of the Braisa. And now the Gemara tells us a couple of stories. Ravina Sevelach Shure Bichnufiasa Da Armai. Okay. Ravina was considering certifying a document, ratifying a document that was... Rashi says it was a regular monetary shtar. It was signed by non-Jews, and Ravina thought should be fine. Amalei Rafram erka os tanan. Rafram says no, because well, like we learned earlier, and like we're going to say again now, and again Rashi's explanation is consistent throughout the daf. No, only if it's an established non-Jewish court, because again, the whole purpose of a document for a transaction, a monetary transaction, is just simply means of evidence and proof that the transaction occurred. So it has to be an established court. Who's worried about the reputation? Once we're talking about a makeshift court, they're not worried about their reputation. It simply is not valid. Rava says there was a Persian document. It was written and signed by Persians, and and this was used as evidence. Hashtar Pasar Demasrena Ala Bape Sahade Israel Magbina Be Bnei Chare. Now, the Persian document was written in Persian, signed by Persians, non-Jewish Persians, and Rava says it's fine. I mean, because it was handed over in front of two Jews, so you had the Eidim Asir and the Eidim Asir are kosher, so therefore Rava says such a document would be fine. So Vahalo Yad LeMikre. So the Gemara says, now wait a second. Eidim Asir are wonderful and validate the document, but only under the condition where they can actually read the document. If the Eidim Asir are not just there to witness the handing over the document to A to B, they're there to read and then understand and then witness the handing over the document from A to B. So if you have the Eidim Asir, but they have no idea what the document is actually saying, Eidim Asir don't, They can't validate the document. So the Gemara says Bidiyade. So the Gemara gives a very simple answer. In this particular case, they know. They understand Persian, these Jewish witnesses, and so they speak the Farsi language. So the Gemara says, okay, but another rule regarding contract law is that the contract has to be written on non-forgeable paper. Paper that can't be erased and rewritten. And there was a certain process that they had back in the time of the Gemara, where they would process their paper so that you knew that if it was erased, it was obviously erased. Now, nowadays we have, you know, to this very day, we have, you know, our checks are quote-unquote non-forgeable. But, so the Gemara says, Bedafi, son. Again, a simple answer is they had it. Meaning the paper that was used was paper that was treated so that there's no way somebody could have forged the document. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know every document needs a summary statement at the bottom. The last line of the document requires a summary statement. And it sounds like from the Gemara that a lack of summary statement at the end will disqualify the document. So the Gemara says, Bedamahadir. So the Gemara says, once again, we have it. So, after asking all these questions, the Gemara says, we have it. Check, 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 check. So basically, now we've checked off every box in terms of what produces a valid contract. So now let's think about it. It's a document where that was, although written in Persian and signed by Persians, but nevertheless, no offense. Non-Jewish Persians. So but nevertheless, the Eidim Asir. In other words, you had witnesses who were Jews who got to witness the transaction. And the fact that it was written on paper that was treated, so it's not forgeable. And the fact is that it was a summary statement at the end. The Gemara says that's also fine. So basically, now we checked every box. What did Rava say? You can use this document in order to collect, but only from B'nai Chorin. Meaning, there's no lien that's created with this document. You can't go after any properties that were sold off that have a lien based on the encumbrance that was created by the document. So Rava says, no, there's no encumbrance created by the document. There's no lien. The Gemara now's question is a very simple one. Well, why not? We checked every box. The document is perfectly legitimate. So let's collect now. Let this document be a means of creating a lien against the obligation. So now that you can collect even from encumbered properties. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara gives a very important answer over here, and that is that this document does not create a kol. Okay, a word about liens. So I think the information that we all know, but let's review. Okay, a lien on a property allows a creditor to lay a stake in the property so that if the borrower defaults on the loan, so the lender can now go after the property. What gives the right for the lender to go after the property? Only if it's contracted loans. If it's non-contracted loans, he can't. And the difference lies in the fact that a contracted loan has a call. Okay, we have a general rule as applies to transaction, which is buyer beware. In the case of buying a piece of property, so we have such a rule of buyer beware. But we only say buyer beware when there's a legitimate way for the buyer to know that there was some sort of encumbrance on the property, that there was some sort of lien on the property. If there is no way for the buyer to know that there was a lien on the property, a financial society cannot function if somebody can come over to you and say to you, hey, you know, I know you bought that property, but he owed me money, and therefore I'm going to collect that property. How can that be fair? And forget fair, how can we have a function functional society if anyone could just simply take away property from anyone who bought the property. Therefore, the limitation of a lien is only going to be under the circumstances where it's documented. The document creates a publicity where now it's expected that people know that, hey, this guy owes money and the properties are mortgaged against the loan. And so that in the event that if he defaults, so then we're going to be able to collect, but that only creates, that's only created from a document. And here what we're learning now, look at the last Rashi in the Amud. Rashi writes, Leslie Kalal, the fish in Khosming Yisrael, the Sahada de Khasima Ashtara Inun Mafki Lakala. This is very interesting, and I'm not admitting I fully understand this, but it absolutely is the pshat in the Gemara. It's the only way to understand the Gemara. But in terms of why, I'm not sure. Eide Mesira are not going to be enough to create the kol. The kol that's created is only coming from the signatures. And Rashi goes on to say, if there is no, if it's non-Jews who are signing on the document, they're not going to create the kol. It's only Jews who sign on the document that are creating the kol. I guess this speaks to the fact that we're a little bit more verbal. We do a better job publicizing. Wait just 1 second. Overperik based. I mean, the ichasim ala Yisrael tarvim mishabde. So only when I have a Jew signing on a document, then we have a kol, and then we have the creditor making a legitimate claim to say, "Hey, he owed me money. You were expected to know about that because we had a document, a signed note that he owes me money, signed by Jews. Then it creates a kol. Now I'm entitled to collect the money. But if I don't have if I don't have a Jew signing on the document, I only have non-Jew signing on the document. And let's absorb this just a little bit more. I'm trying to understand it. I don't fully understand it. Even if I have a de Mesira, it will not be enough to allow the creditor to come and collect from the collect the property. Yeah.
You made a point to Rabbi Elazar. If you sign a gap with a non-Jew, it works, right? So how is she going to collect her tuba?
Right. That's a correct question. That's not discussed in the Gemara. Meaning the get is really two. It's two things wrapped up into one. It's a document that creates her divorce. Meaning it's an Isser document, and it's also a Mamanus document because it's a means of showing of her proof that she was actually divorced in order to receive it. Right. So that's an excellent point. One I'm not prepared to answer.
What? But it's a financial thing.
Right, but they can't. In other words, go back to the Tanakhama's position. Their signatures can create evidence, but it can't create an actual kingdom itself. Maybe you're right. Maybe this is just merely evidence, as opposed to the actual means of transaction. Could very well be. Okay. By Minei Reish Lakish, Mei Rav Yochanan. Reish Lakish asks his brother-in-law the following question. We're on the topic of Yudaf. I'm in Beis. Eidem HaChasumim Al HaGet. If I have witnesses signing on a get, and and their names sound like not Jewish names. So Rav Yochanan says, look, here's what I know. We had a get, and on the get was written the names Lucas and Luce, and we said it was fine. So the Gemara says, but Lucas and Luke, which are clearly not Jewish names. And again, because when you have names signed on a get, this is all according to Rabbi Shimon, according to Rabbi Elazar, which again, the halacha falls like Rabbi Elazar. If you have non-Jews signed on the name and they're conspicuously not Jewish names, under those circumstances, the get would be good. Because again, according to Rabbi Elazar, it's the Eidem Mesira that create the krisus. That creates the divorce between husband and wife. The witnesses signing on it are not necessary. And it's true, Mezuv Matocha creates the problem, but not when they're conspicuously a non-Jewish name. Lucas and Luke are conspicuously non-Jewish. But the Gemara says, but living in the diaspora, there are many Jews that go by non-Jewish names. So it has to be something like Lucas and Luke, which are so not Jewish that that under those circumstances it's fine, but other names, I wouldn't say it. Eitz for the Gemara challenges with a brayse getting a bay me medina sayam. The edim chasumim aleim alpha pisha shmosam kishmos of the kochavim ksherim me mnei shirov yisrael shabachutzar shmosam kishemos of the kochavim. So the Gemara says, you know, we're going to go the other way. According to the brayse, we're going to assume that anyone who signs on the document is Jewish, and even if the name sounds not Jewish, but come on, you know, the Jews out in the diaspora, they all go by non-Jewish names. So here, the brayse actually on the point of ambiguity of name is going to assume that it probably was a Jew. So the Gemara's answer is Hasim Gedikta. In time, the but the Gemara says, okay, but that's not a kasha on Rav Yochanan, because look, that's talking about a community of Jews living outside of Eretz Yisrael. There, the assumption is, the default assumption is that we took on the non-Jewish names. And so fine, so we all have non-Jewish names. So if a get is brought in from Chutz La'aretz into Eretz Yisrael, and the name looks a little not Jewish, but the Gemara says, but there, the assumption goes the other direction. That probably was the Jew who signed on it. Here in Eretz Yisrael, no. If it's a non-Jewish name, it's probably a non-Jew. And only when it's conspicuously not Jewish, then and only then it would be fine. So the Gemara says, now according to another version, it was a brayse that was posed as a question, and the answer was produced from the Mishnah. Okay. Let's start the next Mishnah. Okay. You hand a document to a shliach. Now, as we've discussed since the beginning of the Masechta, but just to review, your shliach is basically your agent. It's an extension of you. Shluchu shel adam kamoso. So therefore, you're charging somebody with the proxy of, you're going to do my bidding because you're going to be me. You're going to represent me. Okay, the very definition of a shliach. As such, much like you can change your mind, meaning if you're holding a get in your hand and you're thinking about giving it to your wife, but then you decide, you know what, let me retract. So prior to you giving it to her, you can change your mind. That's true if the get is in your hand, and that's also true if the get's in your shliach's hand as well, because he's really you. So if you want to be chos there, so you could do so. Okay. We're going to talk later in the Masechta about the possible problem that it would create when she doesn't know about it, but that we'll discuss later in the Masechta. This is true regarding a get isha, and it's also true in terms of a shikhra as well. Okay, an important Rashi over here, which is really the basic issue of the Mishnah, the second Rashi in the Mishnah, Yachzer ve'ein shlech yachol lezachos bahem litzarcho. Rashi is really giving away the Gemara coming up, but the issue over here is as follows. We have a general rule of zachal adam shalabafanov. If I want to accept something on behalf of you that is exclusively good for you, so then I could do that. When we say I can do that, that means that the moment that it comes into my hand, it basically now becomes yours. I now become an extension of you. Zachal adam shalabafanov. We know this happens every week for us by Erev Chatzeros, right? Did you know that you contributed bread to the community Erev? Every one of us in the room contributed bread. Really? I don't remember any getting a knock on the door. I get a number of knocks, but no one asked me to contribute bread to the Erev Chatzeros. So the answer is that the Rav of our community, the Rabbanim of our community, so they did it. In other words, they, at the beginning of every year, they have a box of matzah, they hand the matzah to another Jew, the other Jew accepts it on behalf of everyone within the community. It's only good. Meaning it now allows us to carry from our houses onto the street, from the street to the shul. In other words, zachna adam shalabafanov. It's literally, in this case, it's all good. So somebody can accept it on my behalf. Zachna adam shalabafanov. In the world of get, in the world of shichur, it's not exclusively a zechus. Now, if someone's in a marriage, that's not good. And if someone is an eved, that's also not good. But the woman's freedom, the eved's freedom, is not purely good according to Rav Meir. So therefore, because it's a mixture of good and bad, and we'll talk in a moment about why it's both good and bad, but because it's a mixture of both good and bad, so therefore, in the moment that the get gets into the shliach's hand, and the shliach was commissioned by the husband, it remains still by the husband. The only way the get is going to be delivered is only when the get is actually handed over to the woman. The shtar shichra is actually handed over to the Eved. The Mishnah continued for Chacham Amomer and Begit Anashim Avalabishikri Avadim. Lefisha Zachan Adam Shlobafanav Ein Chavan Adam Ella Ein Chavan Lo Ella Befanav. Shem Yirtza Shlolazan Es Avdo Rashai Vishlolazan Es Ishto Ein Rashai. And the Tanakh, the Chachamim say, look, by a woman, it's a mixed bag. Meaning, a woman getting a divorce from her husband. Again, let's even assume that the marriage is just simply not a good marriage. Okay, so in that regard, it's good. On the other hand, she now is no longer receiving support. Okay, so it's a mixed bag of good and not good. So there, the get is only going to be delivered when the get is actually handed over to the woman. But when it comes to an Eved, it's only good. What's the issue by an Eved? He's not going to get supported by his master. The Mishnah says, "I got news. The master doesn't have to support his Eved Kanani. I know that sounds strange. It sounds let's be even a little bit more honest. It sounds cruel, but the master doesn't have to support his Eved Kanani and doesn't have to provide him food. So now, under those circumstances, it's only a zechus for the Eved Kanani. So the shliach can accept it on behalf of the Eved Kanani." What's Rav Meir's counter argument? We're going to have to wait. The Gemara is going to talk about that. Amar lam va'arehu pasal es avdo min ha'truma kishim shu pasal es ishto. So, to which Rabbi Meir says to the Chachamim, I don't understand. Even for the Eved Kanani, it's still a mixed bag, because if you're an Eved Kanani of a Kohen, so you have an entitlement to eat Truma. Now that you're freed, you no longer have that entitlement to eat Truma. So it's still a mixed bag. It's not all good. There is something bad coming out of a out of the shichra, out of the emancipation. The answer is that the ability for an Eved Kanani to eat truma is, it's true, it's a zechus, but really it's a function of being the property of the Kohen. He's kinyan kaspo, he's the property of the Kohen, and as a result of that, he can eat truma. So once you snip off, once you detach the status of kaspo, of being the property of the Kohen, so he cannot eat truma. But it's not an entitlement per se, it's just merely a function of being the property of the Kohen. Okay, the Gemara is going to explain that point a little bit better. Yosef, Rav Huna, Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef, Kamed, Rav Yirmi, Rav Yosef, Rav Yirmi, Rav Kamed, Nam Name. So the Gemara constructs a scenario, a very usual circumstance within the Gemara, where basically you had a conversation in front of an Amora, and in this particular case, the Amora of Rav Yirmi is kind of in and out of consciousness. Okay, he's half listening and half catching up on some missleep. So let's say you do the following: your tofis on behalf of a bachov, you're going to be kona. Okay, so not the sheet of Rameir, but the sheet of the Chachamim. Okay, the sheet of the Chachamim is that you know that there is an account receivable outstanding. And you, who are a third party, you say, look, I know my friend is owed money. You know what? I'm gonna collect on his behalf. Now, I know this gets a little touchy because we're basically talking about a collection agency, and I'm making the story sound nice and friendly. So I understand. I'm really softening all this. But basically, we're talking about a collection agency. So can I do that? Can I collect on behalf of somebody else, knowing that other people also are owed money? From our Mishnah, the answer seems to be yes, because what's happening in our Mishnah is that I'm collecting on behalf of the Eved Kanani, meaning the Eved Kanani right now is owed by somebody. Oh, I'm sorry, owned by somebody. And meanwhile, the Mishnah says that if the get shichra is handed over to somebody, that person now can be zocha on behalf of the Eved Kanani. So Amalei Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef Afilu B'Makom Shechav La'Acherim. So the Gemara says, now just wait 1 second. Even when somebody else is also owed money, Amalei Yin, he says, the Gemara says, yes, that's correct. Even when someone else is owed money. Ada Achi Tarbu Rabbi Yirmi, or now Rabbi Yirmi at this point in time, half listening. So he's hearing something wrong. So that disturbs his sleep. He wakes up. Amalu Dardiki, and he says to him, Dardiki. Dardiki is not the nicest term. It basically means, you're right, you're young. You're not experienced enough in learning. So if your tofes on behalf of somebody, and that somebody is actually owed the money, but other people also are in line to collect, you can't do that. The person himself who's owed the money, obviously he has the right to collect. But you, a third party, cannot be an intermediary to collect on his behalf. V'im tam mishnah seinu. Now, what about our Mishnah? Kol ha'omer tenu, ka'omer zachudami. Don't look at our Mishnah as proof for anything. Because in our Mishnah, what did the owner say to the shliach? The owner said to the shliach, the owner of the Avi Kanani said tenu. And tenu is code for zachu. Meaning, it's not the pshat that the shliach is taking it on behalf of the Avi Kanani. It's the owner is gifting the Avi Kanani his own freedom. He's saying, Zocha, I want you to collect the Avi Kanani on his behalf. Okay, so there's a fascinating Tosus. I'll just mention it right now. And tomorrow morning, I guess we'll start off with just a little exploration of the Tosfos. The Gemara's conclusion is that if there is account receivables, and you're not the one who's holding the account receivable, and a third party's collecting on your behalf, so Rav Yochanan says, can't do it if other people are going to stand to lose. Tosfos writes over here. You want to see this Tosfos? It's very interesting. Tosfos writes, the Tosfos b'chov makshechav lachem lakana, afilo aser shliach. Tosfos says, even if the person who's owed the money, even if he appoints the collection as a collector, as a shliach, still he can't do it. You have to really think about the Tosfos. Why not? Why can't the shliach do it? The shliach now is a representative of the person who's owed the money. Okay. I know I just drop it right now. Tomorrow I'll pick it up. I'll discuss Tosfos a little bit better.